Welcome to The Sustainable Life. This is Josh Spodek, and we're here with Martin Doblemeyer. Martin, how are you doing?
I'm well, Josh. Thanks. It's nice to be with you.
Glad to have you here. And so this time we're going to talk about Sabbath. I think it's your most recent documentary. And it's funny because watching it, you're talking a lot about ancient cultures, one of the things. But I can't help but think you're really also talking about our own culture and how life is in our modern world, how it could be different. I guess I should take a step back and say, how did you decide on that subject? I feel like everyone knows about it. Some people know people who practice it. It seems like it's practiced less and less, but I feel like everyone wishes they did a bit more of it. How'd you decide on it?
Yeah, I think that is true. I mean, I think that, when I go in to make a presentation to National Public Television that I want to do a film, I have to make an argument, a presentation on behalf of the idea of the film. And I said, look, whether you're religious or not, one of the things that we're all feeling in common right now is this notion that we feel burned out and stressed out. It's not only us, but the people throughout the culture, the earth, and the environment. We're all feeling a sense of fragility and burnout. And one of the things that's been lost in the culture is this reverence and respect for the notion of Sabbath. It's been around for centuries, thousands of years, and we sort of let it go in the last half century, really. And maybe it's time to not necessarily present it again as a religious concept, but as a concept that says that, you know, maybe there needs to be a reimagining of the rhythms of our lives. And that sort of entails a respect for ourselves, for our body, and for the earth that we live in. So I think when you contacted me and said, would you want to come on and be, on the show, This Sustainable Life, I thought, you know, the Sabbath film really is an ideal connection between those two ideas about what Sabbath is trying to do and what you're trying to do with the podcast, talk about how can we be more sustainable. And that's exactly what Sabbath was intended to do, was to create a model of proportionality for how we should live our lives. And that's why we wanted to do the film. You know, I do films on subjects of religion, faith, and spirituality. So I was naturally inclined to do a film about Sabbath. Interestingly enough, I had done a film a number of years ago about Seventh-day Adventists. They're a Christian faith. It started here in the United States, so different than many religions. Adventism started in America. And it's a religion that honors the notion of Sabbath. That's why they call themselves Seventh-day Adventists. They honor the Sabbath. And curiously enough, Josh, they are considered to be among the healthiest people on the planet. Seventh-day Adventists live on average 7 to 10 years longer than everybody else. And so it's the care of the body, reverence for the body, and reverence for the earth, that's sort of given them a different kind of prescription for how to approach the notion of their lives and the notion of Sabbath. And that sort of planted the seed for me to do this film on Sabbath. That was years ago. And then a couple of years ago, I did this film on Abraham Joshua Heschel, who wrote the book, The Sabbath. He comes from a Jewish tradition. So you have Christians and the Seventh-day Adventists and Abraham Joshua Heschel, who's Jewish, but really a brilliant thinker. And those two things sort of initiated the idea, became the genesis of what eventually became my film on the Sabbath.
About the health of the Seventh-day Adventists, I hear about that a lot too. As I mentioned before we started recording that I'm vegan, and they're constantly being measured for their diets. This was actually the first time that I saw in your film was the first time that I saw that they mentioned that they specifically pay attention to health. I didn't know that was part of it.
Yeah, Seventh-day Adventists are interesting. They tend to be a rather conservative Christian denomination, but they do honor and reverence for the notion of Sabbath. Their Sabbath is on Saturday, so begins at sundown on Friday night and ends at sundown on Saturday. But in addition to the idea that they're respectful, reverential of Sabbath, they tend to be vegetarian. They don't smoke, they don't drink. They believe that the body is the temple of God, and they have to respect that. And they also, too, by and large, have some of the finer hospital systems, medical systems in the country and, in fact, around the world. So their commitment to the notion of health is longstanding. And part of that commitment to good, healthy living is embedded in the notion of Sabbath. So they became one of the starting reasons for doing this film on Sabbath. And then I have to say, frankly, I made the commitment to making the film Sabbath while we were in the midst of COVID. We were all at home, couldn't go anywhere. Everything was being done virtually. And I saw that so many people, myself included, felt a loss because you couldn't be together, engage with people that you normally would come together with in terms of worship and prayer. That was lost. Everything was being done virtually now. And it just made me realize how important Sabbath, the notion of Sabbath, was to so many people. And so that combination of remembering the Adventist, reading the book on the Sabbath by Abraham Joshua Heschel, and then being at home and unable to get together with people that normally I was missing in terms of gathering for worship, all of that just said, you know, maybe it's just time to make this film. And the more we got into it, Josh, the more we realized how big and expansive it was. And it's been a lot of fun making the film, frankly.
I hadn't made the connection to sustainability. I hadn't really thought about it. But the movie resonated a lot with an experience of mine that I forgot about the tail end of it. So in 2003 in New York City, there was a blackout, unexpected, you know, and the power just went down. I was at work at the time, and we all had to take the stairs down. I had this really great experience. I think there was some looting. It wasn't really bad like that blackout in the 70s, but I had a girlfriend, and I wanted to go visit her, and I just had to go up there, and I hitched a ride, and the people who picked me up were friendly, and I really, it was like a fun ride. And then the next couple weeks, every time you saw someone for the first time since the blackout, we would say, how was your blackout experience? And everyone had a positive experience. Everyone. And so the driving, you know, hitchhiking wouldn't be, I don't know who would allow that or whatever, but we were forced to take a break. And I thought to myself, and I did start from then on trying to reduce power. So this is way before my sustainability stuff. This is 2003. I mean, I knew about environmental problems, but that was still when I felt like I couldn't do anything and only governments and corporations and all the other excuses. And then I started telling people, oh, I have this great idea. I'm going to use less power and maybe take a day off every now and then. And I remember someone saying to me, you know, Orthodox Jews have been doing this for thousands of years, Josh. That part I've forgotten about, that last line there.
Yeah.
And it's, when I grew up, I thought, oh, that's archaic. I was trying to remember it while I was watching. I think I thought of it as it's something archaic. Like when I lived in France for a year and they had their, what we would call blue laws. I don't know what they call them. But, you know, stuff was closed on Sunday. And I was like, this is so annoying. Why get with the program? And now I don't think that way so much.
Well, yeah, no, we used to have blue laws in this country. They were rather severe back in, especially in the, you know, the different parts of the early part of the 20th century. And we mentioned that in the film. We talk about blue laws. And it's interesting, if you get together with people who are of a certain generation, they have clear memories of how everything in America was shut down, not just the liquor stores, but also regular, you know, merchandise. You couldn't buy a car on a Sunday. You couldn't test drive a car on a Sunday. And you were forced to stop, take time, and intended to go, you know, to sort of practice your worship, but also to get together with your family and have, you know, activities, maybe go and take a walk in nature to appreciate the world that was around you. But commercialism won that battle. I mean, the truth of the matter is they argued that that was a religious law and that they had a right to open up the stores on Sunday. And it's interesting because we did a story in the film Sabbath in Bergen County, New Jersey. Well, it's one of the largest suburban areas just outside of New York. And they have still got the blue laws on the books, and they close the malls. It's an area with lots of malls. And they still find that they can actually make as much money in 6 days as they would if they open up on the seventh day. And so voluntarily now, not mandated, but voluntarily, the people are closing their stores and, you know, sort of practicing a blue laws type rhythm, but they can make as much money doing it. And I also said, everybody that we talked to said that their employees appreciate it more. People come into Bergen County, New Jersey to work in Bergen County, New Jersey, because they know they're going to get 1 day a week off. And they appreciate that. They can spend time with their family and do the things they have to do. So I think something inside of us needs to have some kind of rhythm that's predictable, a predictable rhythm in our lives. And that's what I think the whole notion of Sabbath was started around. I mean, it was begun in the Jewish Testament as a religious practice to give reverence to God who ordained in the commandments, you shall honor the Sabbath. But ultimately, I think people realized that the old adage, the Sabbath was not, it was not for God, but God gave the Sabbath to man, to humanity, to be able to sort of give them a sense of rhythm and pace that they didn't have.
That piece on Bergen County really hit because it's so close to home for me. I'm literally close to home. I'd kind of heard of it, but didn't really, and I wasn't sure if I believed it. And I know that when I was younger, when I was in France, I was like, how can the religion impose on everyone like this? And you interviewed a few people that said, it's not religious to us anymore. It's, if it was, it's not now. And it's valuable. Like what you just said, except there are people who live it. And I mean, people should watch the video to get the what they actually said. And I thought, yeah, it's a really good idea. And it is, I mean, different religions practice it on different days and different times. Is it Friday night? Is it Saturday? Is it Sunday? And so it can be kind of confusing in that sense of, I mean, what happens if you make Sunday the national Sabbath, and then Jewish, if you're Jewish, then it starts Friday night, goes until Saturday night, and then suddenly it starts again on Sunday. It could be kind of complicated, but that doesn't mean it's not valuable. It seems like something we could figure out.
Yeah, when I've spoken to, you know, in the process of making the film, I spoke to many Jews, both Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, and people who were shop owners would say openly that, you know, we wanted to respect our own Shabbat, our own Sabbath, which begins on Friday evening at sunset and goes till Saturday. So we closed the shop. But then we're living in a Christian-dominated nation, and especially during the Blue Laws period, everything was closed on Sunday. So they lost 2 days of business. And that was very painful because they wanted to honor their own Shabbat, their own Sabbath. Everybody was for, the states were forcing them to close on Sunday in reverence to the Christian Blue Laws. It was very, very challenging. And so I think in some ways we have to be open to how we want to think about this, but think about it. I think that's the message of the film. I don't think there's anything in the film that says we want to go back to the days of the Blue Laws. We want to mandate all of this. But I think when people really stop and think about the value of Sabbath, both for themselves and for the wider culture and for the earth, it makes more sense. And just to have a sense of personal rhythm that says one day a week, I'm going to say to myself, I have enough, I've done enough, and I am enough. All three of those things, I think, the more I've been able to sort of repeat that as a mantra, I have enough, I've done enough, I am enough, just calms the soul. And the pace that we go at in this culture today, I think we need something like that to say, I don't need to make another buck. I don't need to go anyplace else. And as much as I'm trying to make something of myself today, I'm going to stop. And I think it's healthy. And I think it's not only healthy for me, I think it's healthy for everybody around me.
What you say is very compelling. And it also, another aspect was, I forget, there's a family, I think, and we don't talk about business on this day. So the family connection, the community connection. And while you're talking about to talk about this and to think about this, you picked a lot of different groups. There's a diversity of sects and religions. And it wasn't just Christian, Jewish, it was Muslim, and there was the secular. How did you decide on all the different groups? Was that an obvious, easy choice? Was it? I presume you were going for diverse views on a similar subject. And some traditions do have Sabbath explicitly, and some have something similar.
Yes. I mean, that's part of what we do. I mean, we've been doing this work now, making documentary films for, you know, almost 40 years. You can't see it, but I have the white hair to prove it. We've been doing this now for 40 years. And we just have come to know a lot of people that are open to welcoming us into their lives and opening up their communities to us. And we're grateful for that. And we wanted to make it diverse. We thought it's really important to do that and to make it broad, a broad sweep, culture-wise, gender-wise, faith, certainly faith tradition-wise. One of the things that I found really interesting is that we discovered that there was something called that was being practiced more widely now than ever, which is a real modern phenomenon, which is called a tech Sabbath, that people have decided on their own to stop one day a week and put down the cell phone, to stop one day a week and walk away from the desktop or the laptop and just give themselves a break from the technology that can be, that goes 24/7. And if you let it, it'll just sort of take, consume everything about you. And so they, but interestingly enough, I found it really interesting that they call it now a tech Sabbath, because the word Sabbath has so much registers with people as to what it's, it sort of brings a sense of reverence and respect to that one day. So that the notion of a tech Sabbath is not really religious, but in fact, it's sort of using the mantra of religion and giving people the opportunity to look at something that they want to practice on their own. And the tech Sabbath is getting more and more popular. So these are the kinds of things that we were able to come upon as the process of making the film. And, you know, your program, your podcast is really focused on the notion of this sustainable life. And I think in terms of us, how we live, here's an idea that we heard again and again over the course of the making of the film. I mentioned that one of the people who I admired, one of the authors of the 20th century, whose name was Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, and his great book called The Sabbath. Really, across the denominations, everybody said, oh, if you're going to read a book, The Sabbath, read Heschel's book on the Sabbath. And his daughter, Susanna, is a very good friend of mine, and she's just a wonderful thinker, theologian, and writer on her own. And she said that growing up in the Heschel household, despite the fact that her father became famous out there on the front lines campaigning against the war in Vietnam, campaigning for civil rights, putting his life literally at risk for these really seminal social and political issues, fighting every day except on Shabbat. They said in the Heschel household, one day a week, Shabbat, we didn't talk about those things. He was Jewish. One day a week, they didn't want to talk about the Holocaust and remembering the Holocaust, to not talk about things that instantly, immediately sort of stir up all kinds of emotions inside of you. You gave your emotions a day off, one day a week, and said that today we're going to think happy, positive thoughts. We're not going to think about the things that have to be changed about the world that we live in. We'll go back to doing that the day after Shabbat. But on Shabbat, not only are we sitting and resting, but we put our souls at peace. And that, I thought, was a really interesting and, I think, life-giving distinction in how to think about Sabbath.
I remember that part. She was in the movie, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yeah, it was depth beyond what I expected. Like, I thought, oh, yeah, I know about this. And I knew some things, and I didn't think of all the ramifications. And it really, it gets you thinking, so many different people practicing in so many different ways, but still something tying them all together. Actually, in my book, learning about living more sustainably, it's almost inevitable to learn about indigenous cultures that have not been a part of agriculture. I don't know if they have something like Sabbath, because I feel like it arose from having to work the land. The labor required to do that forced taking a break. I'm not sure. Did you look into any indigenous cultures that were, you know, not pre-agriculture, but hunter-gatherer cultures?
Well, you know, from the Jewish tradition, Hebrews, of course, are an agricultural people. I'm not sure exactly if I'm following the question. What kind of groups of people did we miss in the film that you'd like to point us to? Because one of the things I will say, Josh, is that when we make these films, it's inevitable that we find out people come to us and say, well, did you ever think about including this? And we missed it in the making of the film. The film is done now, but we're still open to the idea that we can use all the other vehicles that we have available to us with social media and the news and the press releases that we're sending out to raise up awareness. So I'm keenly interested in hearing some other interesting Sabbath practices that would actually help to round out our story that may be practiced by indigenous people.
Yeah, I'm curious if they have it or how it works. But I think of ones that have influenced me and guests I've had on the podcast who have either lived among them or studied them. No, all lived among them. So the Hadza in modern-day Tanzania, I think that culture goes back about tens of thousands of years. The sun in the Kalahari Desert in southern Africa, and they've lived that way for up to 200,000 years, possibly, according to James Sussman, his book, Affluence Without Abundance. Then a couple of people lived among the Tsumane along the Amazon and the Kogi in Colombia. And so they hunt and gather. And a lot of people today think they're living in the common view, and certainly mine up until recently, was that they're living in the Stone Age. They haven't caught up to us, and we have to teach them so they can be like us, or at least advance so they can have airplanes and modern medicine. But they see our culture and they don't want to join it. They prefer theirs. They don't work the land. My understanding is, and it's very tempting for people who, I have to point out, like, I'm not saying that they're some noble savage. I'm not trying to be like them, but I am trying to learn from them, because there are some things like stewardship that they practice that we've lost and or are losing. So they, as far as I know, when you talk to them about religion, they, if you ask them like what happens after death, they say, oh, we bury them and then, you know, we can move on. It's okay, well, what happens to their soul? Or they're like, well, I don't know. I don't really know exactly what they say, but it's different. And since they aren't plowing and working the land, they hunt and they gather. So I don't believe they have any surpluses that they, I think growing a surplus tends to form a hierarchy. They're very, a dominance hierarchy. And they are non, some of them are very non-hierarchical, like not even gender hierarchy or an age hierarchy. I don't know. I've no knowledge one way or another if they have anything like a Sabbath.
Well, I'd like to learn more. I mean, I'll say first of all that we confined ourselves primarily to filming in the United States. We actually made our film in sort of the back end of COVID. And so that created its own limitations and complications for us. But we decided we're going to film this in the United States. And so we used the entirety of the country. And so we did not, when you said indigenous people, my mind immediately went to Native American people. And we had inquired with a number of different groups and could not really find a tribe in the United States, Native Americans, that really wanted to come forward and say, oh, yes, we have a sort of well-established practice of Sabbath or something very similar to Sabbath. Didn't quite find that. Didn't find it really in Buddhism or Hinduism. Did find it within the Muslim tradition. So we were looking for those different kinds of ways and reflections. But I'd be very open to hearing about anything else that, you know, maybe some of your listeners want to send to me some ideas about what they've learned or what they have experience with in terms of the other indigenous people who are practicing some form of Sabbath, both for rest for themselves and also rest for the land. I think that that would be a really wonderful addition. And we have a vehicle set up now through the emails that we have and through the websites and everything else like that to be able to expand the conversation about that and to welcome people into that conversation.
Well, I'll send you links to like the movie called The Hadza, The Last of the First. That's on YouTube. And oh, Alan Herrera, who was he with the BBC did two documentaries on the Kogi in Colombia. I remember asking him, how do they see us? And one of the things he said is that they say, we work way too hard and we're always too busy. So I think it's more built in to have a more, I don't want to say leisurely, but less hurried pace.
Yeah, you know, every time we go to Europe, we're always reminded that Europeans tend to take 4 weeks or sometimes 6 weeks of holiday over the course of a year. And we're all sort of jealous about that. And the other thing too, Josh, realistically, what's one of the big changes in America in the last, say, two generations is that more and more people work for themselves. They have their own forms of their own enterprises. So many people do now. And what that basically means is that if you don't work, you don't get paid. And the converse being, the more you work, the more you can get paid. And so it's very tempting to work beyond any notion of putting a rhythm into your life. And certainly every available hour is a dollar that can be made. And that sometimes can be exhausting. And I feel like the Sabbath film, I think in some ways, can speak directly to them to say that, it, you know, we'll live a better life. We're not saying it's time to be lazy. Let's stop working. What we're saying is that, you know, the one thing that's not changing is that we get 24 hours, 7 days a week, all of us. And how we use it and how we spend that time says everything about who we are. And I'm making a personal commitment to myself to say that, look, I want to have some kind of rhythm to my life that allows me to work hard and then to stop and to really stop and to feel a sense of contentment. And so that's the word that I've been carrying with me now as a result of having made the film. We use the word rest. And rest, I think, and if I can say this, in a sort of a Protestant work ethic culture, which has been the dominant ethic of America for so many centuries now, that doesn't feel like a very positive way of living your life, resting. But the truth of the matter is, one of the things we've totally lost in this country is a notion of feeling some sense of being content. There's an explanation in the film by one of the Orthodox Jewish rabbis who says that when God finished making the world, he rested. What does that really mean? He was content. He was happy with what he had made. It was good. And I think we rarely stop to think that what we have is good and that we're content with what we have. We're taught never to be satisfied with what it is we've accomplished, never to be satisfied with what it is that we've done. And there's always one more mountain to climb. And that is exhausting. And I think in some ways it's detrimental to actually to being productive. I believe you're most productive when you have a sense of rhythm. You're able to stop, say, I'm content, I have enough, I am enough, and then go back to work the next day and work hard again with renewed energy.
This resonates with an effect that I found with a lot of podcast guests. I walk them through this process where they commit to doing something based on their values that leaves the world better than they found it. A lot of time, like Jackie, she's a student in Australia, and you can hear her. She says, I'm doing a lot. I don't have time. I don't know if I have time to do something like this. I'd like to do more with nature, but I can't. After she does her thing, which was, I think, to walk in the beach along the park, it was to walk in nature by herself. When she came back to talk about her experience, she said she has more time now as a result of time in nature. And I think a lot of people get the cause and effect backward. I think that it's not that you're busy and therefore you don't have time for nature. Time in nature helps reset your values. So if you don't spend time in nature, I think that you start doing busy stuff and you just put more and more stuff on your calendar. But if you spend time in nature, you don't do that. So I suspect Sabbath is something similar, that the more that you take time off, the more you don't pile up with stupid stuff. And we got a lot of stupid stuff that we do.
Yeah, we do. We do. Well, it's interesting because my wife and I, we just came back from Australia to New Zealand. We were down there for about 3 weeks. And the one thing that I've been saying is that the mentality and the rhythm of the people in Australia is really different. You can feel it different than what we live in the United States, especially in the inner city in the United States. And that whole expression that's so Australian, no worries, mate. It's not just a mantra that they use, but it's actually a way of thinking. It's in the DNA. They just seem and feel a little bit more relaxed. And once you start to sense that rhythm and get into that rhythm that the Australians have, you know, they use, it's just refreshing. And immediately you become aware of it once you come back into the United States that we really do operate at a totally different rhythm. The clock is ticking. Every dollar is to be accounted for. Every second is to be equated to a dollar. And it's just totally exhausting. And I think it's part of the reason why we're at each other's throats. I mean, one of the things that we haven't talked about now is the notion that you don't need to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist to know that the more exhausted you are, the shorter your fuse is. And I think if it's, without sounding too broad and too sweeping, I think America has reached a point where our fuse is really short right now. So there's the converse has to be true, which is that we have to be feeling just a cultural sense of exhaustion. And that's part of what we're arguing with the Sabbath film. Maybe it's time to stop and take a big, deep breath and realize that we're not only doing damage to ourselves, we're doing damage to each other.
Not just take a deep breath. I mean, make a ritual of taking a deep breath. I was actually on Sunday, I think, so 2 days ago, I was talking to someone on the phone, and we got, I don't know, like not mad. We just got short-tempered. And I was like, maybe we should stop the call. And she said, no, let's keep going. And I said, well, let me take at least 10 deep breaths. And she said, okay, yeah, I'll walk away from the phone too. And I knew it would work. And I also knew it felt hokey. And yet I take 10 deep breaths and boom, I feel much better. And that's so small compared to a full day.
Yeah, and I can't imagine that you didn't in some ways do a reset in that phone conversation. It allowed you to do that. Was it Ben Franklin who said that if you're angry and you're ready to explode, take 10 deep breaths. And after that, if you're still angry and ready to explode, take 10 more. And there's just a sense that we have to be responsible and take control of our lives and think about how we spend our time and how we engage with other people. So I'm hopeful that the 10 deep breaths that you took actually sort of brought your conversation with that person onto a new level.
Yeah, well, it took it back from, I wouldn't say quite anger yet, just impatience. And yeah, it's, in my mind, I'm dancing around something that I think anyone who watches the film, if they're not already practicing a Sabbath, must start thinking to themselves, should I start practicing more of a Sabbath? Should I make, in my language to myself, should I adopt this ritual? Should I, tech Sabbath is something that I see people doing. I mean, I turn off everything when I go to sleep. I sleep with the phone in airplane mode. I don't allow myself to put on the internet, to connect to the internet within the first hour of waking up. Oh my God, when I teach at NYU, 15 years ago, I think, when I started, if I asked them, do you sleep with the phone next to your bed? They'd kind of say sheepishly, yeah, I know I shouldn't, but I do. Now they say, yeah, of course. Why? Of course. How else can I be connected? And I don't think they realize what they're missing or what they're doing to themselves. Of course, that forces me to ask myself, what did I take for granted growing up that someone a generation older than me would see as not helping so much? And with the Sabbath going back thousands and thousands of years, it's hard not to think that that's not just a flash in the pan sort of thing. And let me ask you, to take it away just from me, do I want to commit to something like that? Because I know I'm going to like it afterward. But have you gotten feedback from viewers who have watched it and changed?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just constant what we're getting. I had a conversation with my brother on Sunday evening, and my brother is a practicing Roman Catholic. So he and his wife get up every Sunday and go to church. Hadn't done that for years with their family, but the kids are getting older now, and go to church on Sunday. And so you would think that would sort of that mindset of Sabbath would be really prevalent for them. And my brother watched the film, and he came out to an event. I was given a public address around the event, around the film Sabbath. And he said, no, I've just, I realized that I hadn't been thinking like this at all. And so now he and his wife are much more intentional about practicing a full day off. And they go take walks they live in Florida. They go take a walk on the beach or find the woods or do something Sabbath-like to reconnect with the beauty and the natural world around them, to reconnect with their family in a different way, to stop and to sort of put their heart and soul and mind at peace. And that's somebody who's religious and tends to be, but that whole notion of Sabbath is sort of just gone from them. And other people would contact us and say, look, we're not religious at all. In fact, we're sort of anti-religious, but this whole notion of Sabbath does seem logical and helpful. So we're going to try and figure out a way to approach it in our own way, sort of take our own values into it. But we see that it's good and that it's good for our body, our minds, and for whatever we think of as our souls. And that was the idea of the film. I mean, to be able to sort of give America a chance to take a breath and think about this whole thing in a different way, not to advocate that there'd be legalized blue laws again in place to mandate all of this. No. But in fact, to simply say, look, voluntarily, I'm deciding I need to have a rhythm of a break. What I find really interesting is that I deal with a lot of people who are who are religious people, pastors and ministers and rabbis. And you know, Josh, who sometimes is the worst at practicing Sabbath are the ministers, the pastors and the rabbis.
Yeah, that guy who drove around like crazy.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's true. Because, you know, we asked them, I said, well, you know, you're the minister here, and so you work triple hard on Sunday to make sure that the services are being provided for people on time, thought out, and delivered so that I can take my Sabbath day, and you're the last one who's getting a restful day. And they'll all say, well, yeah, you're absolutely right. My Sabbath-like day is Tuesday, or my Sabbath day, well, I'll take it as Thursday. And I say, honestly, how good are you at doing that? And they say, well, kind of okay, or maybe I guess I should. Some of them will say, yes, I'm very disciplined, self-disciplined about it. I'll take Tuesday. I'll totally take that time off just to be with family. Most of them, frankly, admit that they work their hands to the bone on their Sabbath day to deliver for their people a day of rest and worship. And then the Tuesday, which is supposed to be their day of rest, they're a little softer on that. They'll start doing something, or then they would have to run to the hospital to take care of somebody else because that's what a minister is supposed to do. So, and they sheepishly say, we believe in the notion of Sabbath. We preach the notion of Sabbath, but sometimes we can be a little hypocritical ourselves in terms of taking a full day rhythmically, regularly taking a full day off ourselves.
It reminds me of, I'm not going to be able to cite a source here, so I may get the facts wrong. I think I remember that in the Soviet Union, they wanted to keep the factories running all the time so that they staggered weekends. And it did give people the day off, but it did not create the community where everyone together, and maybe they did that with vacations. Is this something you know about?
Yeah, no, we were hearing stories about what was happening in the Soviet Union as far as sort of trying to figure out that. And they all had some mixed success, really. I mean, it's just, there's been many sort of takes on this notion of, you know, creating a rhythm. I mean, in this country, I mean, really until the middle of the 20th century, we really had industry ran the rhythms of our lives, totally ran the rhythms of our lives. And as we point out in the film, historically, it's interesting how labor, institutionalized labor in this country, meaning unions and labor, and the notion of Sabbath really found compatibility and support for each other because unions and labor was really interested in taking care of their people. And so they were always out there advocating for the notion of Sabbath or, you know, Sunday blue laws, all those kind of regulations that sort of allowed people to have a mandated day off. And so unions got a bad rap as far as industry was concerned, but unions came down on the side of Sabbath and protecting the right of people to have a day off, because the truth of the matter is otherwise capitalism will run roughshod over everything. Everything is about the dollar. And in some ways, you have to fight back. If somebody's interested in doing more reading about the notion of Sabbath after you watch the film, if you're interested in that, there is a wonderful book by a brilliant Christian theologian by the name of Walter Brueggemann. And Walter Brueggemann's classic book is called Sabbath as Resistance. And his whole principle is around the notion that Sabbath, Shabbat, was a way to resist Pharaoh, for Jews to resist Pharaoh and the work 24/7 ethic that was about building the pyramids, building the great infrastructures and everything at the cost of people's lives. Well, today in America, Pharaoh is really industry. It will consume you. It will take you over unless you create some sort of form of resistance to the industry. And Sabbath, he argues, Walter Brueggemann argues, is the way to resist the new Pharaoh of our moment, which is industry.
Earlier in this conversation, you said commerce won. And the film didn't delve into how did it win. You also mentioned that the Protestant work ethic, which seems to be contributing to that. Capitalism is something independent or related but different. Did you look into how commerce won?
Yep.
You know, there's not like a battle. There weren't battle lines drawn. And yet what you said rings true. And yet what happened?
But there were battle lines drawn in the sense, Josh, that enterprises, businesses, you know, Walmart would say, look, I mean, the truth of the matter is you telling me I have to be closed on Sunday is the it's really a religious practice. And that's the imposing of your religious principle, Christianity, on us as industry. And we're fighting that. And we're saying that you don't have the right to do that in a free society, a society that's supposed to separate, create a separation between religion and the culture. The Constitution says that, you know, the country will not make laws that will protect religion. And they argue that the mandating of closing of everything in America on a Sunday was the protection of the Christian faith. And they won that battle. Fundamentally, industries decided that it's more important to be able to be free to open up as you choose. And we're not going to mandate the closing of industry on Sunday because that's really honoring a religious practice. And so those were fought mostly in the 50s and the 60s. And industry won. I mean, fundamentally, it just won. And so, I mean, I grew up, I'm old enough now to remember blue laws. You couldn't do anything on Sunday. All the stores were closed. You couldn't buy anything. And you better get ready. It's really interesting because, I mean, if you read from the biblical text, it said that God will provide manna to the people of Israel enough on that sixth day so that you don't have to harvest and bake and work on the seventh day. And so you proportion your week out knowing that Sunday is Sabbath day, Shabbat, that is going to be free of work and enterprise. And the truth of the matter is we're finding more and more that people are learning that if you really want to practice Sabbath, you prepare yourself 6 days a week to have a seventh. Whatever your day is, if it's Saturday or Sunday, it's not just what do you do on that one day, it's rethinking the other 6 days of the week. How do you rhythmically set yourself up so that you have the stockpile set in place that you can function properly on the seventh day without needing to engage in enterprise, without needing to go off and do the work of a normal day, another day. So I think it's really interesting. And like I said, that story that we did in Bergen County, New Jersey, showed that you can actually have as much success in enterprise, in profit making, by working hard 6 days a week and giving your people the seventh day off.
There's an irony of because it was supported by religion, it lost. People can't view it as secular because it can work as secular. It doesn't have to be promoting religion. And I guess that's why you're saying have the conversation, because that's not obviously that's not easy to work out. And yet it feels like there's a potential for everyone, or let's say for society, to benefit from it.
Yeah, I think that there has been a lot of reimagining the role of religion in culture in America now, especially in the last couple of generations. In some cases, religion has behaved very badly. Ministers and people who profess to be religion have behaved badly. And so in some ways, the baby gets thrown out with the bathwater. And yet at the same time, some of the ideas and the principles and the possibilities that exist within certain practices are worth rethinking. They actually help us. They were intended to help us. And the idea that we sort of overreacted, which is kind of what America does. I mean, we go down one direction, then we totally reverse and go back off in another direction, never finding a way to seek a balance, to seek a reasonable middle. And that's what I think that we're trying to say with the film. You know, you don't have to be so overtly religious or so overtly committed to a regiment that becomes crippling, but just to simply say that, you know, there is an inherent value to the notion of taking rest, to finding a sense of comfort and a sense of contentment in ourselves at least one day a week that transforms how you approach the other 6 days. And that, I think, to me, is a gift more than an obligation.
Yeah, for me, it just keeps coming back. Do I want to do this? And I suspect, I hope other people, listeners, are feeling like I am. Am I going to do this? I had on my podcast Vincent Stanley, he's been with Patagonia since the beginning. He's the nephew of the founder. His commitment to do something sustainable for his commitment was to, I think it was for a month, he was going to not have any screens, no electronics on Fridays before noon. So not a full day. And when I had him back, I asked him, you know, how did it go? He wrote a book of poetry. I mean, he writes poetry. And he said he wouldn't have gotten that done otherwise. And you're talking about, there's all the stuff you're talking about. And I think also of this reprioritizing our values or recognizing our top values and allowing them to percolate to the top and allowing low value things that are busy. I guess it would be that in the language of, I think it was Eisenhower, we do a lot of fighting fires. It's the urgent, important things, but the non-urgent things are where the value is.
You know, I've heard you say several times, Josh, that, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. You know, you said I'm thinking about doing this and
yeah,
I'm just not sure if I can do this. You know, in some ways, this is like exercise. I mean, I'm turning 73 in a couple of days and I have an annual physical and my doctor says I'm in good health, but in part because I exercise. I do a lot of exercise and exercise is the same thing. It's like you think, oh, man, am I going to, you know, am I going to walk 5 miles every day? Do I want to commit myself to that? Oh, what about the day it rains? Oh, and there's all these reasons why you kind of argue yourself out of it because, you know, number one, it's the creation of a new rhythm. And you've already created a rhythm for yourself that doesn't include whether it's Sabbath or exercise or whatever it is. And it's demanding change. And yet at the same time, you think to yourself rationally, it's good for me. I should be doing this. And you just take the plunge. You decide, look, I'm doing this. I think it's the right thing to do. I'm in. And I think it's easier to do it together with other people. And I think the notion of a practicing in a Sabbath or Shabbat is easier if you're with like-minded people and doing it. It's part of the reason why, I'll argue that's part of the reason why the Seventh-day Adventists seem to be quite successful at this, because they tend to live in enclaves. Like, you know, conservative Jews, they live in enclaves. Orthodox Jews, they live in enclaves, and they support each other. You know, the whole block of shops is closed on Saturday. And so if you're able to sort of immerse yourself in a community, whatever that means to you, that supports you, that values what it is you're trying to do, supports you when you fail, needs your support when they fail, I think it's easy to do that. And whether it's exercising, you know, or practicing Sabbath or whatever it is, I think it's easier in community. There's a line in the film, there's a wonderful project going on at Princeton Theological Seminary up in Princeton, New Jersey, where they're, as part of Princeton Theological Seminary, they have 21 acres where they turned it into a farm, and they're teaching the ministers who will be the next group of ministers, next generation of ministers who will be in congregations all across America, that in addition to reading the theology books, we want you out working the land. We want you digging and planting and harvesting and doing all that kind of stuff. That's one of the classes that they have to take. And it's taught by a man who's written a book called Wrestling with Sabbath, Wrestling with Rest. It's about farming according to Sabbath principles. And he's trying to teach the next generation of ministers about that. And one of the things he argues in the book is that Sabbath as a principle was given to people already in community. It wasn't given to us. Sabbath wasn't given by God to individuals. It was given to communities of people. And the expectation is that it's easier to practice Sabbath and more fulfilling to practice Sabbath when you're in some kind of community, 1, 2, 4, 5, 10, whatever it is, a community of people really help affirm each other and sort of give you support on the times that you fail and find it difficult to get back up and get in again.
I'm thinking, listeners, I would love to hear from them their experiences to the Sustainable Life community. And I'd love to hear from them. And I hope they watch the movie and how it changes them and also what changes they've done in the past so I can hear what people around me have done and are doing. And I think I should set up, Martin, can we set up a time to give you some accountability to, because it's not just something to think about. I mean, it's something we can talk about with others. You're not suggesting anyone impose on others, but we can not impose on ourselves, but, you know, we're responsible to ourselves. And if I talk to you sometime later, that will force me to think about it more and see what I do. I might not do anything, but I might.
And then you feel guilty about it. Well, that's one of the things religion is terribly good at doing, is instilling guilt in everybody for not living the way that they think you should. But yes, I think living, you know, the idea of doing it in community makes it easier. And I think in some ways, if I can use the word fun, it actually makes it more fun. But the truth of the matter is, once you decide that, whether it's exercise or, you know, the practicing of Sabbath, once you decide that this really is in my best interest, and this is kind of what I'm called to do and to expect of myself, I think you find communities of people who are around you. If you decide you're going to get up and run as a jogger, and if you live in New York City and you decide you're going to run as a jogger, inevitably you'll find people at 7 o'clock who are out running with you, and boom, that's the beginning of a community of people, just a couple of people who sort of share that run with you. If you want to practice Sabbath, there's plenty of avenues to be engaged with other people and to talk and share ideas about Sabbath with other people. So I think doing it in community is the way it was intended.
I'm glad you said that. I hadn't thought about that. That, like, instead of how should I do it and then start and figure it out by doing, and also find people in the process. Like, that will lead me to find people. If I try to find them before doing it, it's going to be harder than if I do it and then I suspect people pop out of the woodwork.
Yeah, and then you'll get different perspectives on it. Different people will sort of bring their own values to it, their own experiences to it. And somewhere along the line, it'll help you think it and rethink it and formulate your own policy and your own program for it. And I think that's what this is really all about. I mean, we all have to live our lives. We all have to be responsible to ourselves and to the others in our community, the people that we care about. I want to be as healthy as I can be. That means physically healthy, meaning rest, exercise. I want to be emotionally healthy, and that, I think, also demands some sense of rest and a feeling of contentment. And I think Sabbath is a path to all of that. And that doesn't even mention the notion that for some people, it's not a question of whether or not it's good for me, once again, for number one, but that it was given to us by God. For them, a certain number of people in this country would say, no, rule number one is it was given by God. God said you should do this. I'm going to do it. But a growing number of people in this country don't think like that. It's not important to them. But I think if you do look at who benefits from it, I think number one benefits from it.
Something I didn't think to ask until now. There was, I forget it was your movie or it was something else, but I was learning about Jubilee years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was this movie. So that's on every 7 years. There's debt forgiveness or letting the land lie fallow.
Yeah. Well, we have a little chapter in the film. The film Sabbath is 2 hours, and it's made up of a number of different sub-chapters. And one of the chapters in the sub-chapters in the film, there's something called Shemitah, which is a Jewish expression for every 7 years, you let the land rest. If you think of the Hebrew people or an agricultural people, the care of the land was sacred to them, and you let that land rest every 7 years. And so they have a whole series of practices around what you do leading up to that seventh year, Shemitah year, and what you're supposed to do and not do during the Shemitah year. But in addition to that, every seven Shemitah, so that means 7 times 7, 49, the year afterwards is 50. So every 50 years is the Jubilee year. It's very, you know, it's been practiced for centuries, the Jubilee year. And there's still fragments of it that are being practiced around the world. And on the Jubilee year, Josh, you're supposed to not only let the land reheal itself, but you're supposed to return, the slaves are supposed to be set free. The ownership of lands that have been in your possession now for 50 years should be given back to the original owners. There's a whole program for sort of the reestablishing of the reordering of the world around you in the Jubilee year. That's totally lost. One of the things we're honest about in the film is we mention how a lot of Christian people were actually slaveholders themselves. I mean, before slavery was outlawed in the United States, many of the people who were slaveholders, tragically, were Christians. You know, adhere to a Christian ethic or went and practiced, you know, Christianity on their Sunday, and then went back to working their slaves as hard as they could on Monday morning. And it was a totally duplicitous way of life. And yet they were obligated under the same laws, the same Judeo-Christian laws, to free their slaves in the Jubilee year every 50 years, and they didn't do it. It was just unworkable for them. They're going to keep the slaves. So there's practices that are laid out there, and there's hypocrisy sometimes in the way those practices are executed. And it's in some ways, it's tragic.
Yeah, lots to think about, because when we look back at others not like letting something slide, it's easy to see, and then, oh, what am I letting slide? All right. To the listeners, please let me hear from you of your experiences with this. And I hope everyone after this conversation, after hearing this podcast episode, they go and they watch Sabbath. It's on YouTube. So you can watch it right now.
Just to be clear, if you go to YouTube, we recommend you go there. The whole 2-hour film is there and available. It's called Sabbath Journey Films, because there had been over the years, other people have done some kind of a film on Sabbath, but ours is called, if you go to YouTube, it's Sabbath Journey Films, and that's our 2-hour film on Sabbath.
And I'll put the link in the notes. Anything I didn't think to bring up before wrapping?
No, I'm grateful to have the chance to talk to you again. You're you create really engaging conversations, Josh. I'm very grateful, not only for the conversation that we've just had, for the good work that you do. The sustainability idea in America is long overdue, and I think more and more people are getting on to it. And I think the religion world, if I can say this, I think the religion world has awoken to the notion that we have to care for this planet that we all live in. They were slow to the game, frankly. The environmental movement had slowly took root in the religion world, but now you have the Catholics, the Pope. Pope Francis came out with Laudato Si, which came out in 2015, which compelled the Catholic communities, the 1 billion Catholics around the world, to get on board and care for the earth that we commonly share. There's new traditions now within the Jewish faith that call for being much more environmentally astute to what the crisis that we're all facing. So religion, I think, is becoming more and more of an ally to the care of the planet, which it's a little late to the game, but I think their gift is going to be significant.
Yeah, I've had on this podcast as guests leaders in Judaism, in many sects of Christianity, Catholicism, Islam, Buddhism, more to come. But so far, I think probably some atheists as well. We're coming up on 800 episodes, so I can't remember everything just on the top of my head.
Amazing. There you go. Amazing when you think about that. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm honored that you say that. It's a passion. It's a calling. I couldn't imagine not doing it now that I've started because of conversations like this one. And it changes me. It helps me grow and learn. I hope that does for the listeners.
Well, I feel the same. I congratulate you, applaud you for the good work that you're doing, Josh.
Well, I'm going to wrap there because that sounds great. Martin Doblemeyer, thank you very much.
A pleasure, sir. Thank you. Hope we have a cause and opportunities to sort of connect again on this.
I look forward to it. How many people are bringing a message of joy from what everyone calls saving the environment, but I call the future? Step by step, this podcast is creating a culture of joy, community, and connection around sharing and acting on our environmental values. Again, there's no profit in buying and wasting less, but we'll all love our lives and relationships more when we do. I can use your support. Please donate at joshuaspodek.com/donate. Again, that's joshuaspodek.com/donate.